This past Saturday night, the world went dark for an hour, starting in New Zealand and moving west with the sun. Some people around the world turned off their lights for 60 minutes to make a statement about the link between energy use and climate change. Maybe you missed it, which raises one set of questions. But even if you did participate, what difference did it make? Brian Walsh, who writes the Going Green column for Time.com, joins us in just a moment. So did you even know about Earth Hour? If you did you mark the event? And if you did it matter? Call us with your Earth Hour story, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Brian Walsh, the environmental writer for Time magazine, joins us now from our bureau in New York. Nice to have you on the program today.
Hi.
And what did you do when the hour struck 8 p.m. on Saturday?
I was out taking a run, actually, but the lights were off at my house.
They were off in your house. Did you notice as you were out for a run that they were winking off everywhere as you went around?
I can't say they really did, no. I mean, it's, you know, you saw a little bit but in New York City where I am, but, you know, it certainly wasn't as if the entire city went dark, which would have been pretty outstanding if it had.
Yeah, it would have been. And I gather there was considerably more participation in some other places.
Right. I mean, Chicago in the U.S. was probably the city that did the most, partially because the mayor there, Richard Daley, has been very keen on making Chicago the greenest city in the U.S., and so you had hotels that were doing candlelight check-ins. You had people doing things on their own. And then San Francisco as well, and Oakland turning off the lights on the Bay Bridge and the Golden Gate Bridge. New York a little bit behind, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And if this is going to be happening, I mean, there's a couple of questions here, one of which is if this went off with, I think much of the country may have been watching the basketball game mm-hmm. at 8 o'clock, and they might have been willing to turn off the lights but not the television set.
Right, exactly. I mean, maybe they should think next time. This did come from Australia, so they may not have been thinking what effect this could have on the, you know, on the NCAA final tournament. But you know, it was something that it did get some attention. I mean, the WWF, the World Wildlife Fund, which was behind organizing it worldwide, says it, maybe tens of millions of people around the world did participate in one way or another. But you know, I mean, it didn't quite grab the world's attention, maybe.
And that raises one set of questions. If you really can't grab a lot of attention, does I guess what the Brits often call in their books a damp squib, is that worth the effort?
I think it's definitely worth the effort in the sense of any time, and this did grow. I mean, this is something that started in Sydney last year with one city, and now, you know, this year it crossed the world, and they're hoping that next year they'll get countries like China and Russia involved. So, you know, it's important. Climate change is really it's going to become a political issue. It's about trying to get politicians around the world, here in the U.S., elsewhere, to actually act on this, to sort of institute the kind of laws and policies that will really create change on a global level that's needed to really do anything about this. So if you can show even just the beginnings of the fact that there is a constituency out there that values this and is willing to even go without lights for an hour, that does say something. Of course, it does. You know, as we're saying right here, kind of opens it up to a bit of skepticism, a bit of cynicism, you know, whenever you try something like this.
Mm-hmm. And symbolism, getting the attention, that's the point, because as you also point out in your article, actually turning off the lights for an hour doesn't make all that much difference.
No, I mean, we're trying to actually slow down the rate of increase in global carbon emissions. You know, 1 hour of electricity being turned off in some cities around the world it won't even make so much as a blip. I mean, so that's not what matters. And the organizers, of course, know that. They're not stupid. They understand that this is a symbolic effort, and when you're dealing with politics, the symbols matter.
Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, symbols, again, if 90% of the country is watching the basketball game, you're not making a big symbolic point.
Well, no, you're right. You are. I mean, it's it does make me concerned, because I think you ask people about climate change, they know it's happening. So that battle's been won. You certainly couldn't go to someone and say, do you know it's happening? And most people will say that, yes, it's happening. Humans are the main driver behind it. That's settled. But now the question is, what do we do about it? And we've been given lots of small things we can do on our own. We can use less power. We can switch our light bulbs out for compact fluorescents, but use less electricity. We can, maybe if we really wanted it, we can buy a hybrid. You know, we can get a more fuel-efficient car. We can try to fly less. But, you know, if you actually add all this up, it's not going to make a big difference on the grand scale. So the question is, how do you make people value this on a political level? How do you make it as important to them as perhaps the war in Iraq is or the economy is? And that's going to be a challenge for environmentalists, and that's going to be a challenge for the politicians who actually want to do something about this.
And as you also point out in your piece, it comes at a moment where you risk green fatigue.
Right. And I think that's a real concern here because, you know, as I said, climate change has been a top issue, and certainly in the media now for several years. So people are gotten to the point where they are a little bit scared, but it's not like local pollution where you can go and pick at a plant or you can see the effects. I mean, if you shut down, say, a polluting plant that lives near you, you'll see how the air gets cleaner. Just as we've seen the air get cleaner in major cities around the U.S. thanks to changes in behavior and changes of law. I mean, climate change is global, and any effect on it is going to take decades, really. So to keep to keep the motivation going, to keep the momentum going, is going to be very challenging. And I think that's why it has to be taken, you know, to a higher political level, rather than really focusing on the individual things you can do, which are nice if you want to live a green lifestyle, but they're not really enough.
We're talking with Brian Walsh, an environmental writer for Time Magazine, about the Earth Hour, which passed from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Saturday. I guess it was 8 to 9 p.m. no matter where you were.
Right. As you said, it followed with the sun, so it started at 8 o'clock all the way around the world.
And we're asking you, our listeners, what did you do to mark Earth Hour, or did you notice it at all? 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Jackie in Denver, Colorado, emails, "We turned out our lights. For us, it wasn't so important that for an hour we reduced our carbon footprint, but instead that we had the opportunity to talk to our kids, age 7 and 9, about how every bit of energy we use affects the world." So there you go, a teachable moment.
Exactly. Well, that's good if people actually did take that opportunity to, and that's another way to look at it. I mean, like, we're so addicted to electricity in modern life that just shutting it off does give us that opportunity. But I wouldn't want the message to go out that, you know, you need to abandon electricity, you need to abandon power. I mean, these are good things, especially when you think there are well over 1 billion people around the world who don't have access to electricity on a regular basis all the time. For them, it's always Earth Hour. And, you know, they need the electricity. That's a key aspect to improving your economic life. So, you know, what we want is the kind of policies in place that create the technology that allows us to have power, have lights, have everything else we need without carbon, and to decarbonize that.
And I suppose the point would be lost if everybody went out and made a campfire during Earth Hour.
Possibly that wouldn't exactly be the sort of point we're looking for.
Let's talk with Greg. Greg with us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
My experience with Earth Hour was I work for a large accounting firm in Phoenix, and they encouraged all the employees to participate and turn your lights out and whatnot. And so, you know, I had full intentions to do that, but I ended up not doing it, actually, and I felt guilty about it. But it was funny because the announcement asked everybody to participate. Yeah, then it suggested that maybe you should drive your car, you know, drive somewhere and look at the city lights turn off and whatnot, which we thought was kind of funny, you know, counterproductive if it was driving just so that you can watch the lights be out and save energy that way. But I think the point is just to be aware of you know, your carbon, your footprint, and that conserving energy is a good idea. And so in that regard, I think it was a successful sort of a firm event that we had.
So, Greg, what did you do on 8 o'clock Saturday night?
You know, the funny thing is I don't remember what I did, but I know I didn't participate, and I had full intentions to. I think that, you know, I'm 26, and I think the younger people, maybe this isn't true, but I feel like younger people in their 20s and probably more so teenagers are more aware than I am even. But, you know, I just graduated from USC this last year. One of our classes, I'm a business student. We talked all about the business side and ways that people can maybe capitalize off of this new industry that's popped up and whatnot. So anyway, I find myself being aware of it, but I have a hard time following through.
Thanks very much for the call, Greg. And thereby, Brian Walsh hangs a tale. A lot of people agree with it more or less, but have a hard time following through.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the problem with voluntary actions. You know, I mean, there are always going to be the dedicated greens out there who are going to be doing this all the time. You know, who maybe they'll do Earth Hour every month. But what we need is to make it so it's something that you don't have to remember, where it becomes part of daily life, simply, you know, whether we create the policies that make energy efficiency necessary, whether it's like something like carbon capture, increasing energy efficiency for household appliances and so forth, so you're using less energy without even thinking about it. Because if you have to think about it, then it's not really going to get done. I mean, whether you're American or elsewhere in the world, it's never going to be at the top of most people's minds enough to make a difference.
Let's talk with Eleanor. Eleanor with us from Cincinnati in Ohio.
Hello.
Hi, Eleanor.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure.
We happened to be over at a friend's house, and we set a fire in their fireplace and turned out all the lights and got out candles and played charades. So it was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. So you'd do it again if it came up next year?
Definitely.
And would you go have the party at your house this time?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. And charades, did you play any other games?
We talked and stuff, but so we
Did it seem like a long time before you could turn the lights back on again?
No, not really. We were just having so much fun.
I guess, Brian Walsh, if we could all follow Eleanor's model, this might be a lot more successful.
Yeah, apparently not having electricity is a lot of fun if you know what to do while you don't have it.
Thanks very much, Eleanor.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate the phone call. We're talking with Brian Walsh of Time Magazine. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go to Roger. Roger with us from Green Mountain in Colorado.
Yes, indeed. My wife and I shut off everything in the house, computers, lights, everything, and walked to the local grocery store west of Denver knowing that their lights would be on, and I'm wondering, did we defeat the purpose by going into a lit grocery store to complete some family chores?
I don't know. Brian, what do you think?
I'm going to rule that, no, you didn't defeat the purpose. I mean, you did walk there as opposed to driving there, which, you know, is important. You turned off your lights, so I think, you know, you get full credit for participating.
I know, but you got to appreciate the, you know, just debating over how guilty you should feel. This is progress, Roger.
Indeed. Anyway, it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed the time with my wife, and we're going to participate again next year more fully.
Roger, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's try Craig. Craig with us from Montrose in Colorado.
Hello, this is Craig.
Hi, Craig. Go ahead.
Hey, we turned off all the lights, but then my wife put on a bunch of candles like some other folks there. And so I don't know if it does any good or not. But the other question I had is, you know, is this all for naught? Are we past the tipping point already where, you know, the natural cycle has been exacerbated by all our anthropogenic warming? And if we're not past the tipping point, what data leads us to believe that we're not?
Brian, what do you think?
Well, I think I don't think we're past the tipping point. I mean, you talk to different scientists, you'll get different answers, and quite a few are very concerned that we're getting very close. But I don't think we'll ever get to the point where it's we should give up or that's not going to be worth trying to make a difference. I spent a lot of the last few months meeting with a lot of people involved in the technology field, and there's so many solutions that are out there in solar power and wind and hydroelectric. We have to create the conditions that allow these to happen. And when that does, then it's going to matter. I mean, we should be concerned. It is getting worse. And you think about things like the growth of China, the growth of India, and the huge energy demand coming from those countries. And that does worry you. But we do have the solutions out there. We just have to put the conditions out there to put them in place.
Craig, can I ask you if you thought it was largely counterproductive because you turned off all the lights and the computers but then lit a lot of candles and stuff, why did you do it?
Well, because my wife wanted to.
Okay. Thanks very much for the call.
I'm just more a little more cynical than she is.
Possibly. Thanks very much for the call, Craig.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And let's see if we can wind it up with Joe. Joe's calling us from Racine in Wisconsin.
Hi.
Hi, Joe.
We had an interesting experience. We went. We live over the border from Chicago and Wisconsin and drove in. We would have liked to have taken the train, but the train schedule was very poor. So public transportation also needed help. But we went to a Mandy Patinkin concert at the Chicago Theater. And he had them turn off all of the lights except two spots and the exit signs. And he took the opportunity to talk to the audience about it and performed in very low light.
So it was the best of all worlds then.
It was a fabulous concert, a message that got across. But I agree with the gentleman from Time that we moved here and built a house, and we had a very difficult time finding sustainable products. For example, we wanted a hot water heater that was on demand. Couldn't find anybody within about 2 hours from here to service it. So we couldn't buy the product because we knew we'd have a maintenance problem with it.
So
everything is a hurdle when you want to try to do something sustainable.
But given your experience at this, you would be happy to participate again next year?
Oh, sure.
Oh, sure. Okay.
If a concert comes with it, even better.
And if a concert comes with it, even better. Joe, also, thanks very much for the call, Joe. And Joe, Brian Walsh pointed out an interesting point. They kept the light on the emergency exit signs. I assume also people driving their cars were urged to keep their headlights on. All sorts of emergency and safety problems were, I'm sure, fully illuminated. But nevertheless, getting back to the point, do you think this can become a much bigger deal next year?
I think it can. I mean, I think the bigger it gets, the more it'll show that there are people like Joe out there that do value this, that are willing to really go the extra mile. I mean, they'll go through all the difficulty it takes to be green. And, you know, as that spreads, you have that sort of that hardcore, people out there who really push, and then slowly it'll grow from there. And you get people who maybe they're not willing to make quite as many sacrifices, but they will, say, vote for a politician who would support carbon cap. You know, those are the kind of choices. You get a mass of those people, then we'll see the conditions in place for real economy-wide change.
And send those Australians the schedule for the NCAA tournament next time, okay?
Exactly.
Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Brian Walsh, environmental writer for Time. His latest column titled Earth Hour 08, Does It Matter? You can check it out at time.com. He joined us today from our bureau in New York. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan. Tomorrow, travel tips for how to navigate summer vacation without going broke. This is NPR News.